This is the official EFL podcast.
Hello again and welcome to the podcast. On this week's show, we're joined by Andy Hinchcliffe and David Prutton from Sky Sports and EFL On Quest pundit Michael Brown. Starting with you, Andy, we're looking at some of the fixtures in the Sky Bet Championship first of all. The early kickoff between Derby and West Brom. Two big name managers coming head-to-head in Philip Koku and Slaven Bilic. It really shows you that the Championship is one of those places to be in world football right now, doesn't it? Attracting those sort of names.
Absolutely it is. I think you remember last season we had Frank Lampard, Marcelo Bielsa having their first seasons in the Championship. But we have to appreciate the Championship is the fifth most watched league in Europe. So the attention it gets is absolutely huge. I remember reading a Slaven Bilic interview recently saying he wanted to kind of tick off coaching in the Championship. And you've got to remember, he's worked at international level and the Premier League, but he still wanted to come to the Championship. And to me, it's all about the passion, the intensity, the quality in the Championship that draws the coaches in. Of course, the possibility of taking a club up and becoming a Premier League coach is a big pull for anybody. So the Championship, every season, it seems to get a bigger and bigger league. That's why we're getting all these great coaches coming and wanting to be there.
Yeah, David, were you surprised that they chose to come to the Championship, those two names?
I think if you go off what Inchy's just said there about the kind of scope that it kind of gets around world football, hopefully, from our point of view, it'll attract more and more names such as these. It's a real showcase for managerial talent. I think what happens as well is if you look at managers that take teams into the Premier League, the cachet that comes with that is immense, because everyone knows how big it is, how tough it is to do. And everyone within the game looks at that and goes, it's a phenomenal achievement to get a club out of there. I mean, some have made it look relatively straightforward, the likes of Rafa Benitez. Some big clubs have been there for far too long. So I think it's a great response to football that's played, to the attention that it's given. And I mean, the other side of it, and this is something that Michael might be able to give us a bit of insight on. When you are a manager and you want to be in football because there's only a finite amount of jobs, then I'm not saying that Koku and Bilic have gone, oh, this might be my only chance to get back in, but active kind of employment and showing people what you can do spurs you on for your next job. Because as we know with the manager, that they always need to be looking for the next job, such as the precarious nature of actually having a job at this moment in time. So I think, yes, they've got to do it exactly right from a PR point of view. And they have said both the right things. They're both looking at what the league can offer and how tough it is. But also, I think it's a wonderful place for them to showcase not only the squad that they've got at their disposal, but showcase their talents to show what a multifaceted pair of managers they are.
I think for me is that, you know, you look and you sort of say, well, you know, Derby had a good start, but you're going into it as a manager, as Inchy said there, the first season is always going to be the big test. We've seen with Marcelo Bielsa how excellent Leeds United were. Can you keep it up through the season? The midweek game, a lot being mentioned there, how the players, you know, cope with that. Derby have been a squad now who predominantly just keep missing out. They get close year on year out, and with the hype obviously that they've had of the signings and with Wayne Rooney, and I'm just looking to say, well, whether they've got enough. Waghorn, we see, we've got Jack Marriott. I thought Bielik was a good signing for them, and Clark from Portsmouth, but I'd be disappointed now, since obviously the big sign of Wayne Rooney, how this has ended up.
Yeah, Michael, you sort of touched on it there, but looking, you know, at Derby, obviously they had that impressive start at Huddersfield, but no winning three since then, and the first of defeat in midweek against Bristol City. What does the pressure start? When does the pressure rather start to ramp up on managers nowadays? Because obviously in the modern game, you know from your own personal experience, whether it's right or wrong, you don't get that time, do you?
No, you don't. And you look and you sort of say, well, West Bromwich Albion would be one of those who you'd fancy to come on very, very strongly this season. At the game that stands out to me, they've got Forest in the cup on Tuesday. So if we're talking about pressure, if they don't get anything against West Brom, then there's no better game than Derby v Forest. So the pressure's on. That's what football management brings now for the players and staff. That's just normal these days with the amount of attention it gets. It's the riches of the Premiership, as we've alluded to, say why the Championship is so big.
Yeah, Andy, shortly after their opening day win, they did sign Wayne Rooney, of course, as we've mentioned. Obviously not joining the club until January, but could the hype around a transfer like that be a distraction for Philip Koku, do you believe?
It could easily have been, but I remember watching him when he was interviewed at Rooney's unveiling, and you could see kind of his experience really shone through. He's very measured and he's very calm. He probably knew that he's signing the highest profile individual that's ever joined the Championship. Now, that can easily cause distractions for Derby on and off the pitch. But what's helped them, I believe, is the gap between now and when Rooney arrives. It might actually be helpful to Cocu and the players. They can just concentrate on the football and not the circus that's around Wayne Rooney. But his influence, of course, when he arrives in January, could be the difference between Derby going up and staying in the Championship. But overall, I think Cocu and Derby may be thankful at the end of the season. They've got a bit of breathing space. After Rooney said he was coming, they've got that bit of breathing space, 4 or 5 months, to just concentrate on the football. And I think that's going to help them.
Yeah, David, looking at Bilic's start at West Brom, sixth in the table, unbeaten, a lot of quality signings coming in, like, you know, we've seen with Zahor, Austin, Sawyers. A lot to be excited about if you're a West Brom fan right now, do you feel?
There is indeed, but let's look at a club that sacked a manager when they're in fourth. So he possibly might have to do even better than he's done so far just to make sure that he sticks around. I think what he's managed to do with players like you quite rightly mentioned Kenneth Sahor, which I think the majority of people that saw that transfer happen would have been pretty surprised. I'm sure Cardiff were very happy to get that type of money back on a player such as he. I think Sawyers is a nice touch, kind of going full circle where he started his career and having shone at places like Walsall and Brentford, and now he's a big fish that goes back into a big pond, isn't it? It's imperative that he steps. I mean, he makes him tick. The amount of touches that he gets on the ball is absolutely phenomenal, really. And I think, allied with the likes of Charlie Austin, who we know can score back four goals at this level, and younger players, the ones that stood out for me, Nathan Ferguson was one in the opening game against Forest, just very cool, calm, collected. And Slaven, as we spoke to him afterwards, was very keen to say, yes, well done, but don't worry about that. I'm going to keep his feet on the ground, which when he says it and then stirs you, just chills you to the absolute core. So I think he made sure that he would have been able to keep that kid's feet on the ground. And I think from their point of view, 45 goals went out the door there with Galen Rodriguez. They had to make sure that they replaced that. I think they've got to be aiming at playoffs as a minimum. I don't think you get Slaven in to have a team that misses out on the playoffs. But it's, as we well know, it's easier said than done. But what we've seen with them so far, and I mean, allied to the experience of a Jake Livermore, they have the makeup, if you like, and the squad of a team that can do something significant at the top end of the table. And from what we saw last season, it was the defence at times absolutely killed them. So that's something that needs to be an ongoing priority and needs to be assessed and monitored, that they don't have to just keep outscoring teams in a ridiculous fashion to get the points on the board.
Yeah, and of course, being in a playoff position wasn't actually good enough for Darren Moore at the time, was it?
No.
But a big player they had to replace, Michael, was Dwight Gayle, of course, as David just mentioned. Do you think that they've done that with Zahor and Austin?
Well, you just look and sort of mention, as David mentioned there, the amount of goals, 23 goals for Dwight Gayle. And Zahor, and that's a funny one, is you know, £8 million from Cardiff. I think they were very, very pleased with that type of deal. And that's probably an understatement, that they didn't probably think they would get that much for him. But Charlie Austin's come in, you'd say, yes, he can score at this level. There's a few question marks about his fitness levels at this moment in time. And that'll be something that's, you know, it's got to be improved. But I do see them being very strong with the squad they've got. And just going back to, that's why he's come there. Bilic has not come for anything other than try and win promotion. And with that squad, you would have expected him to do, you know, better than they did last season. And I think they are relatively okay signings, but it's going to be hard to better the amount of goals that, you know, obviously Dwight Gayle got them.
I think it's a great point that Michael makes there about the fact of the squad that's already at his disposal. When you look at Darren Moore, and we'll come on to talking about Moore with regard to him at Doncaster, everyone kind of looked at it, thought it was harsh. Question marks about who was doing what with Graham Jones there as well. But from the point of view of giving a manager what he needs, and again, from Michael's experience of being in that kind of hot seat, it's almost like, well, a new manager comes in, so then money's available, like, is this new shining novelty thing, let's back him. And you could forgive Moore for looking back and thinking, oh, hang on, well, yes, we might have our goals, but then they've kind of tooled up again and really backed him. And I think Slaven came in from a good position of power where it's a coup for them to get him. But also, it being a coup means that demands would have come through the door along with a new coach, such as that.
Yeah, Andy, coming on to our next match now, you know, Stoke v Leeds, top versus bottom. Looking at the away side, first of all, you were at Elland Road when Derby performed that miracle comeback in the playoffs last season. How impressed have you been by Leeds, and how they've recovered at the start of this season?
I think losing in the playoffs is always shattering to any team, but surely it had to be even tougher to take after Leeds had such a consistent season. They were there or thereabouts pretty much all season long. But the key for me, Marcelo Bielsa staying. You know how he works. He is completely relentless. There is only his way. And the performances that I've seen so far, they actually look physically stronger than last season. That's saying something, because they were the fittest team, one of the best organised teams in the Championship. So clearly, they are fiercely focused on finishing in the top two. And I think with the makeup of the league this time around, we've lost the quality of Norwich and Sheffield United and Villa. There's a good chance that Leeds can finish in the top two. And it looks like they're going to try and take that. But I think losing to Derby seems to kind of sharpen the players and Bielsa's appetite to get the job done this time around. They're not going to rely on other teams to maybe fall away. They are going to be absolutely relentless. And as I say, fitter than before. They're a season wiser for working under him last season as well. Anybody that finishes above Leeds is going to get automatically promoted this season.
Big call there, Andy. David, I want to focus on Stoke now, though. How much pressure is on Nathan Jones to get things right now after such a difficult start to his time in charge there?
I think it's building. It built more off the back of that performance on during the week against Preston. It was staggering, really, to watch that. Senior players making very kind of rudimentary errors. Yes, the focus is on the goalkeeper, because it's one of those where, as the lads will say, if a goalkeeper makes a mistake, there's absolutely nowhere for him to hide. It's the thing, everyone turns round, and it's almost like a reflex action. You can't help but turn round, but then you think, well, everyone's looking at it now, so we're reinforcing the fact that we're looking at the goalkeeper that's made a hash or something. But defensively, they were all over the place, absolutely all over the place. It looked like Preston could go forward and score at will. There was a real period in the second half where Preston dominated possession. They knocked the ball around. They were very, very comfortable. I mean, the stats bore out perhaps a different game. Stoke shaded the passes, shaded possession, but ultimately did nothing with it apart from get a consolation goal very, very late on. And I think and having spoken to Nathan, I've got a lot of time for him and seen him do wonderful things at Luton with a group of players that he brought on, and a group of players that I've got a lot to thank him for where they are right now in the Championship. But whatever he's tried to transfer over to what Stoke want to do is something's not clicking. Something's not clicking. Having spoken to Gary Rowett about it, about perhaps the makeup of the club and the reaction to coming down, that's not necessarily tension in the dressing room, but the atmosphere in the dressing room. I thought Nathan had adjusted that, because bringing nine players in and getting rid of some of the big personalities, you feel he's got to get results and quick. Jan Sievert's gone from Huddersfield. That was a slightly more toxic combination, I felt. But what we've seen so far with Stoke, he can't legislate for. He can set his team up tactically, technically. He can work with them all week on set pieces. The minute your centre half doesn't head the ball from one goalkeeper smashing it 70 foot in the air, and then your midfielders don't track runners, you don't clear a ball when it's there right in front of you, then you're asking for trouble. And at this moment in time, it still looks like they're all playing for him. The minute it looks like they've dropped off that, then I think he's in serious trouble. But there's no man there that's working harder than him to try and turn it around.
The one thing I would say is, obviously, Nathan Jones playing the diamond formation at Luton, it did take them 6 or 7 months by his own admission for the Luton players to get a handle on playing this diamond formation. He's brought that to Stoke. So yes, he's got some very good players, but he's playing in a way that a lot of them haven't played before. And if you look at kind of the average positions of Stoke's players, it's simply not a diamond. They're really struggling to take that on board. So it's whether Nathan will be given 3 or 4 months it might take for the players to actually take it all on board. So it's actually formationally the team having a real struggle playing the way that Nathan wants them to, but he will get there if he's given time.
But Inge, I mean, that's it's worth saying, chatting about it, and we all know and think or believe in a certain way of how football and football clubs should treat their employees. But do you think he will have anywhere near enough time to be able to cement that? Because you give him 3 or 4 months and they're no better. They're staring down the barrel of dropping down into a division, which it's happened to Leeds, it's happened to Sheffield Wednesday, it's happened to Sunderland, it's happened to Portsmouth. It's not beyond the realms of possibility for a club that was stable in the Premier League for a decade to suddenly find themselves in the third tier, is it?
Yeah, I think the major problem is he's going into a team in Stoke that have invested so much money in players. They were planning for a very quick return to the Premier League. And obviously, Gary Rowett came and went very quickly. Nathan's gone in there after great success at Luton. So the problem is you would probably get more time at other clubs. But because he's at Stoke, it needs to happen straight away. Because I do think another month goes by and things aren't starting to click. Stoke changing it again because they're desperate to get back to the Premier League. It would make sense to stick with it, but because it's Stoke and the money that's already been kind of spent to try and get them back, I do think Nathan's under real pressure.
This is one where you're probably looking, you're thinking the supporters are going to add the pressure. That'll be the difference at these type of games. They've been treated so well. I mean, only recently they were moaning about Tony Pulis and the style that he had. They wanted to improve. It was difficult to watch. And you have to be careful what you wish for. And I think we looked at Gary Rowett going in there. By his own admission, he would have expected to do better than he did. But they make the change. They wanted the change. And now that the vicious circle starts to happen all over again. And ultimately, I wouldn't be surprised if the next few weeks, that unfortunately, Nathan Jones could actually go. And that's a difficult one because as a young coach, I would expect him to improve, but I'm just not sure he'll get the time because of where we are in the world of football at the moment.
Yeah, but Mike, obviously players are massively low on confidence as well. One of those undoubtedly seems to be Jack Butland. Does Nathan Jones have to be brave now as well and drop him from the starting lineup, take him away from that limelight?
It's such a tough one, that, because you've got a talented player. He's not short on confidence. We know that about Jack Butland. He'd be the first to be in and around and not shy about his own ability. He's made those mistakes. The only thing I would say is, what's he like round the training ground? What's he like with his fellow pros? Is he actually sulking? Is he causing a little bit of a stare because he didn't get his move away? And that's only Nathan Jones, you could say. Because he makes two mistakes, you don't just say, let's drop Jack Butland because we've got a talented player on our hands at that level. But you've got a backup in Federici, who actually is only the one who's got a clean sheet against Wigan in the Cup. So they will be looking at that and thinking, do we just take him out for a week or two? But I think it's a big call at this moment in time for Nathan Jones.
Yeah, Andy, obviously everyone saw the errors he made in midweek, Jack Butland. A lot of speculation, like Michael mentioned, linked with a move away from the club in the summer. Do you think he's been distracted by that, maybe?
From his performances, clearly it has. He's lost his focus. His mind doesn't seem to be on his job. But Nathan Jones, his first responsibility is to the team. And for me, for my money, he has to take Jack Butland out of the firing line. From a technical point of view, just looking at the goalkeeping mistakes he's made, the goals he conceded against Preston were incredibly poor. They're kind of schoolboy errors. So, yes, as a team, Stoke are really struggling. The diamond formation is not working. But if you're looking at an individual, looking at Butland, we know he's an international keeper. He is a top-class goalkeeper, but not currently. So Nathan, I think, has to make the change for Jack Butland's good. But as good as the team, he's got an able deputy in Federici. It's not as if he's got a 17-year-old kid that he might have to throw in. I think any other player at this point would be given a break. I do feel it would be sensible just to take him out of the firing line, put Federici in there and see how it goes. Because as I say, any other player would probably be given a break at this point because his form has been so poor.
Yeah, David, coming to you now, do you think maybe some of the players, like you sort of mentioned earlier, it's not just Butland who's in bad form here, but do you think some of the players are using Butland's form as an excuse maybe for poor performances? Only two wins in 22 shows you how poor they've been.
I really hope not. Like I said, it's an experienced group of players, and there is that the kind of old adage of you win as a team and you lose as a team. And as Andy quite rightly says, if a player in that position was having if a player in another position was having as much of an ill effect on football matches for a certain team, he would get taken out of the firing line. I've always thought it's a huge statement whenever you drop a goalkeeper. It's a massive statement because in any other position, yes, we're rotating. Yes, he's getting rested. We're changing formation. We're looking for something a little bit different today. You're dropping the goalkeeper because he's costing you points. There's no other way you're doing that at all. So maybe for a goalkeeper that's been on an upward trajectory and maybe plateaued slightly, it's a first real test. It's a test of being in the firing line, and then everyone's looking at him to say, how do you react? But as for the rest of the players, there's too much experience in that team for them, I would hope, to hide behind what is going on in between the sticks. As I said, you look at the goals, Inchie's mentioned the goals against Preston. The first one is a mix-up. The second one goes under his body. The third one, you've got a substitute that came on and you can see what he wants to do, but passes the ball to the opposition, which it almost makes it sound comical. And I mean, no way taking the mickey or anything like that there, but you watch it and it's that aberration in possession where you go, I don't really know how I've done that. And don't believe me, I did it so many times. I still didn't get to address it, but you're going, I quite obviously didn't mean to put that there, but it's gone there and it's led to a goal. So it's a collective responsibility. But as and again, going along with what Michael said, and it's not airing a note of doom, but it's far easier to get rid of one man than it is to say to the whole squad, you know, you lot haven't been up to scratch. 10 of you, go on, see you later, fling your hook. Because it just, as we know, and it will always be thus, football cannot, and from a business point of view, it doesn't work like that. One man goes and another man comes in and tries to mop up what's gone before, but they need a result for him, I think, more than anything. Like, as I said, and I'm not kind of being naturally biased because of the little bit that I've known Nathan and how well he's been with us as the media to talk to him pre-match and going into games. He's always been very open, very honest. I played against him and he was exactly the same as that as a player. But there's an intensity to him that you think is erring on the side of obsession, which as a young manager, and if you're a fan, paying your money every single week going with reputation, as we know, of certain kind of aspects of football, there's not one fan that can watch a Stoke side and say that manager has not given us absolutely everything, because he's literally living and breathing the whole thing. And I hope for him that it turns around.
But so when you've got a senior player, international player, Jack Butland, you're bottom of the Championship, you're a young up-and-coming manager, do you risk losing him completely by leaving Jack Butland out of the squad? Is that you and him done?
I think if there's an ego side of a player that perhaps believes himself to be better than where he is, I think there's a danger that could happen. There's a danger that he could look at, and I mean this with the absolute utmost respect for Nathan, look at Nathan and go, well, hang on, you've come from Luton, you got our League Two, you left them when they're in League One, you're now working with us. I've experienced the Premier League, I've experienced different parts of it. I would hope that wouldn't be the dynamic of that, but it would be a huge test of Nathan's managerial kind of journey, because it as we know, it lays down a marker. That player goes back into the dressing room and goes, oh, you never guess what, and everyone goes, okay, some will go, I can't believe it, and they'll blow smoke up his backside and say it should be this, it should be that, and that's when player power becomes very questionable in a dressing room. But I think I'd like to think that a player who aspires to be a regular international player has got the wherewithal and the self-awareness to say things aren't going right. Give me the chance, boss, firstly, to turn it around on the pitch. But if the decision is taken out of my hands, you've got to go back to the basics. I'll show you in training. I'll show you my attitude. I'll be there. And it's all very common sense stuff, isn't it? I'll be there and I'll help the number two that goes, and I'll see what I can do for him. And I'll be the best teammate that I can be. Because right now, for some reason, I'm struggling at my number one position, which is between the sticks.
Yeah, the onus puts has to be on Jack Butland, because I understand what you're saying about Nathan Jones and his relative inexperience, but surely you have to be a professional when things are going well, when things are going badly. And if Nathan Jones takes you in the office, shows you the goals that you've conceded and said, this is why I'm making the change, surely Jack Butland will be the first to say, you know what, whether I'm 17 or 27 and international or not, I can understand you making the decision and I respect it as well. And that's where Nathan, this is a real test of his managerial abilities. It's not that he's going to do it to kind of lay down the law. He's got to do it for the right reasons and then hope that Jack Butland is the senior professional that he is and takes it in good heart and tries to improve, or something's done and he moves away from the club. But the onus is all on Jack Butland. And I think Nathan Jones, as I say, he's got to do what's best for the club and hope that Jack understands that.
And I think if you from the kind of school of thought of erring on the positive and things, decisions being made that will eventually bear fruit, then it could be a period of real growth for Nathan and for the team. It could be that kind of classic Hollywood moment of, we look back at that period in the season where things were tough, but we pulled together. The greater good was what we were all kind of searching for to push Stoke back into the Premier League. Because as we know, yes, from the point of view of being in the right place, in the best league in the world, what comes with that? Your money goes back up. I mean, the exposure goes back up. All those things, the chance to get back into the national team goes back up. And I think, as you say, I'd like to think that there is an element of the greater good being the kind of main focus. But again, without sounding like a pessimist, we know footballers too well. Sometimes other stuff creeps in, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And Michael, looking at the match itself, the final point on this game, looking at the form that Stoke are in, do Leeds sort of have to be a little bit wary of that? Have been a bit complacent going into the game. One of their worst performances last season came at Stoke, of course.
Look, Marcelo Bielsa, I don't think them players will really want to be taken as being complacent. They'll know about it. He makes changes early in games when people are not doing exactly what he wants. I think they've just got to go and be as positive as they can. They have to be aware of, obviously, the players that Stoke City have. And but they've got to come out very, very quickly, put them on the back foot and use their confidence they've got against a struggling Stoke side. It could be a hostile atmosphere. And again, they'll be putting pressure on either goalkeeper, whichever selected. But it's a great opportunity for Leeds United, I think, to go on. And ultimately, I can see Stoke making changes shortly, the way it's going. And especially if he drops him at that point, I think the owners will be saying, Jack Butland being dropped at bottom of the Championship, how come he's got so bad?
Yeah, final point on that one then. So moving on to the Sunday match now in the Championship. Andy, Swansea taking on Birmingham. We saw the job Graham Potter did at the Liberty Stadium last season in terms of consolidating Swansea's position when they dropped out of the Premier League. Steve Cooper now seems to be developing that philosophy put in place even further now, doesn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. I think the transition from Potter to Cooper has been pretty much seamless. I think the Swansea hierarchy should be applauded for that. I think Graham and Steve were brave appointments. Everyone, when it first came out, people were a little bit surprised. But clearly, both were the right appointments for the way Swansea had to proceed, really. They had to balance the books. They wanted to bring younger players into the team. And if you consider they've lost Dan James, Ollie McBurney as well, the football this young team is playing is truly outstanding. And he's also, Steve, getting the best out of experienced players like Baston and RU as well. So he's doing the job right across the board. But I know for a fact he'll not be getting carried away with the success they've had early in the season. He's not that type of character. With young players, you just got to keep on battering home the message day in and day out, game by game. And I'm sure that's all he'll do. But they've not been a surprise, because we saw glimpses last season under Graham Potter of what maybe Swansea were capable of. But it's not easy when you lose one coach, bring another in that people haven't really heard too much about. It's been a tremendous start to the season, and I'm sure they're going to have a decent season. Are they going to threaten the top six if this carries on? Very possibly.
Yeah, like you say, maintaining the philosophy there. David, looking at Birmingham, an impressive win for them midweek against Barnsley after the big defeat at Forest, of course. It's not been a bad start for Pep Clotet either, has it? After what must have been, you know, tricky summer at the Blues.
Oh, it was. It was another summer of upheaval, wasn't it? And it's been, as you say, I mean, you looked at the reaction to that heavy defeat. Players coming out on social media and apologising for the manner in which it kind of unfolded. And then question marks again about how they're going to respond to that. I think the players that are stepping up to the plate, we know what Jukovic can do. We know what a player he can be, Jimenez as well. Montero's a decent little cameo signing. I mean, whether you're going to get consistent 90 minutes from him, I think still remains to be seen, because remember him roasting Ivanovic, which what seems like an eternity ago at the Liberty, and he just kind of fell off a cliff after that. But he's got the pace to be able to affect a football match. And I think it's a strange one, isn't it, with Birmingham? Because we look at it and they make decisions, they chop and change. Gary's gone out the door now. It's no strangers to getting rid of managers, whether they've done good, bad or indifferent, really, have they? So it's now Pep turn in the shop window. It's a funny one with Pep, I think, because as we've seen him, I get the feeling, and this is through no kind of inside information or coming across the fella at all, I think you've got a first team coach who appears to be quite rightly lauded for what he does, but he seems to be fiercely ambitious, doesn't he? I mean, you know, when you see kind of coaches staff go, they come in and when they all go together, mob handed. You know, there's a couple of times when he's just been hanging around. I said, oh, there's a manager's job. I'll tell you what, lads, I'll just hang around here. Just when you all go and find something else, I'll just see how this works out. It almost seems like then he goes, well, I do quite like the coaching, so let's get that back out onto the football pitch and see what we can do. And I think from Birmingham's point of view, I really don't know where you place them in the Championship. I genuinely don't know. I think on their day they can play some very good football. I think there is the odd aberration around the corner, like the heavy defeat against Forest. So it's a strange. I mean, maybe they're the very definition of what you look at a team ensconced around the middle of the Championship would be. Some days they're great, some days they're not so great, but over the course of a season, you can have a squad that will entertain you and infuriate you in equal measure.
Like you say, a typical Championship team. Michael, a big win and a big performance for Swansea as well midweek against QPR. Do you think that they could be the surprise package this season, maybe? You know, second in the league, joint top of the table.
I think when you start like that and you get that confidence early on in the season, it's a big part as a young team. When you get confidence, you'll be able to try things and a bit more belief, and you get that momentum. So it's a fabulous start. There's always a surprise package in the Championship. Whether it could be them, whether it could sustain it, that's always going to be the key. Four league goals straight away for Baston certainly helps your cause. And that's what they're going to need, you know, somebody to get a big tally of goals. But yes, I think they're going in the right direction. And it's sort of strange where Swansea are going to be after some successful seasons. They're bringing, you know, they're bringing a manager of Graham Potter, who's very ambitious. And you're thinking, how did they do that? Was that the right sort of appointment? So, you know, it's a well-run club and they're in the right place at the moment.
Yeah, Andy, obviously, Che Adams' departure left a void for Birmingham to fill. Do you think they, like David mentioned, do you think they filled that with Alvaro Jimenez and Lukas Jukovic? Do you think they can fill that void? And, you know, obviously both scored in midweek as well.
Well, the early signs are good, but Jukovic, I think, certainly brought the best out of Che Adams last season. In many ways, he kind of enabled that move to go through. There was great understanding between the two of them. So he'll be looking to recreate that with Jimenez. But I think both strikers are actually helped by the fact that Pep Blatter has actually switched, I think, in three of his four games to playing with a back three or a back five, which means they can play with a genuine front two. That's why a lot of coaches switch to that kind of formation. So that's going to work. At least you've got a pair playing up there. No one's going to get isolated. But I think Lukas Jukovic is severely underestimated for what he provides. He's a great team player. And I think if Birmingham wants to avoid any relegation worries this season, then that front two need to stay fit. And they could fire Birmingham to relative safety. They could even get higher than that. We know what the championship's about. If the formation works and those two strikers are given lots of service, they could be a team that could threaten maybe the top 10, the top six. So that's what's so wonderful about the Championship. And Birmingham, with all the problems off the field they've had, changing coach, it's good to see them have a good start.
Yeah, David, likewise, Swansea have lost, you know, big name players like McBurney and Dan James, like Andy mentioned earlier on, to help them balance the books. But obviously that hasn't affected them, has it?
No, it's not. And it's, I mean, we can make so much about players coming in and out of a football club and managers moving on, but fundamentally it gives other players a chance to step forward. Michael's already mentioned the likes of Bastard and Chalina, players that we've known of, we've heard of, and players that need to step up to the plate to make sure that whatever this current incarnation of Swansea is gets them to where they want to go. And they're not struggling scoring goals. I think it's something like 9 in all competitions in the last 3. So we're down there on Sunday. It's a game that I'm thoroughly looking forward to, just to see them up close and personal, to see what all the fuss is about and just how good and exciting they are in the flesh.
Yeah, Michael, looking back at Birmingham, what is it like when an assistant manager takes over as a manager? You know, it must be an odd situation for the players.
It is strange because that's one of those where, as an assistant manager, predominantly he's been one who's gone round the dressing room, gone a bit more arm around the players, getting more of a feel. The manager keeps away from that. And then from the next day to go on and then they say, are they calling you Michael? Are they calling you Brownie? Or is it Gaffer? And it just becomes a bit awkward that you're actually then the person who's got to be mean, drop someone who you've been close with. And actually, if you've come through the club, like I did at Port Vale, you went from player to coach, player manager. And it's just a difficult situation. But you have to understand, with the amount of change around now that goes through with management and coaches, you understand very, very quickly who's going to be in charge, who's going to have that authority, and you just got to do your job. So it's more the manager, really, that, you know, feels a little bit uncomfortable, but you have to deal with it quickly.
Yeah, but it certainly should be an exciting weekend in the Sky Bet Championship, as it always seems to be. Now moving on to Sky Bet League One, and Andy, Doncaster against Lincoln is the game we're going to look at. Danny Cowley's not happy with the way that Doncaster have had that midweek clash, you know, cancelled for obvious reasons. How much of an advantage is that to Rovers?
I really don't see it being a great advantage for them at all. I think coaches have always complained about this. And they do have a point about an extra workload of midweek games when your opponents don't play. But for me, it's the actual losing, the 2-1 defeat to MK Dons that will hurt the players more. You don't feel as tired if you've won, so they've lost the game, so they've got to pick themselves up. But for Danny, it's really, you know, managing the training schedule between midweek and Saturday. I'm sure he's been focusing on that. And I just don't see that 90 minutes at Stadium NK is going to change Lincoln's chances on Saturday. They've started the season so positively. I'm sure they'll put that midweek defeat behind them. But it's something coaches have always gone on about. I wouldn't say it's an excuse, because there is a point in there to a degree, but it's so early in the season that I can't see it having a major effect.
Yeah, David, like we've mentioned, Darren Moore's come in after what seemed to be a harsh sacking at West Brom. Not the easiest job for him either, considering the players that Doncaster have lost this summer.
Yeah, and obviously the change in management with Grant moving on and what would be expected from a club such as this. We've seen them make light work of this level. We've seen them be a pretty productive kind of bottom half championship club. So there'll be aspirations there for them to be able to compete at the highest possible level. I think Darren goes there with everyone's best wishes. The gentle giant that he is has got a lot of goodwill behind him, as you say, off the back of that very seemingly harsh sacking at West Brom. Yeah, you look at players that have gone, but I mean, players that have come in, Keziah Sterling is a player that people keep, well, raving about. There's whispers that Poch was not too 100% about letting him leave on loan because he was on the fringes of maybe getting into their squad. So that shows what type of potential he's got. John Taylor's coming from Rotherham. And from the point of view of what we expect from Donny, they've always been a very nice footballing team, a team that likes to get the ball down and pass. And I think it's business as usual, you feel, at the Keep Mo. I think just going on to what Inchi was saying about Danny Cowley, I mean, Danny's an extremely bright fella and he never says anything without a hint of mischief, I don't think. And to almost claim fixture congestion or a pile-up in the first month of the season with regard to the workload of the players is a little bit of a stretch. And from what I heard from Donny's point of view, they only heard on Twitter the fact that the game had been called off. So it wasn't like there was anything preemptive in the way that Donny went about coming out of that fixture, because as we well know, they would have fulfilled it and it'd have been relatively even kind of Stevens when it comes to the game at the weekend. But no doubt a fascinating matchup, and I'm really intrigued to see how it turns out.
Yeah, Michael, obviously Lincoln suffered their first defeat of the season to MK Dons in midweek, but how impressed have you been with the way in which they performed this season so far? Second in the league after another promotion, of course, as well.
Well, I think, as you mentioned, another promotion's been an incredible turnaround of a football club, and you know, they just keep going from strength to strength. And Tyler Walker at the top of the pitch, I think he could be key. I took him on loan to Port Vale. Sadly, he got injured, but he's got everything if he fulfills his potential. And he started off with goals this season, backed up with Grant and Payne and behind him. So it's you know, they've got a good style. They're hard to beat, and this is now how they've got to react. They're going to lose a couple of games. The reaction needs to be positive. Yes, he's going on to unfair advantage in midweeks. I think that'll come round later on in the season, where other times it happens the opposite way round. So you just got to get on with it. But it's a fantastic start, and I'm sure he'll be saying that to the players.
And finally, Andy, looking at League Two, the game we're previewing is Newport taking on Crewe. Obviously, so early in the season, but how much will that heartache of the playoff final defeat to Tranmere still be in Newport's minds? Some would argue that they were the better side that day.
They were very unfortunate in that final. I remember watching it, could easily have gone their way. But if you look at their results and their performances so far, there's been no feeling sorry for themselves. There's been no hangover so far. They're unbeaten in the league and the cup as well. So it's always the same challenge for beaten playoff finalists. Is it going to define your next season? Or does the desire to kind of go one better drive you on? So far for Newport, it's been the latter. And I think for players, it's so important. Okay, you go through pre-season, but once you start playing again and winning again, those bad memories that happened at Wembley do fade. And that's what's all important for Newport. And I wouldn't be surprised if they go close to promotion once again this season.
Yeah, David, how impressed have you been by Crewe, though? You know, no one at the start of the season was tipping them to be in contention, really. They then suffered a big opening day defeat to Plymouth. Three wins on the bounce puts them top of the table.
Yeah, it's a great reaction, isn't it? They had a very solid pre-season and then that rude awakening back to the league. I mean, it's no disgrace, I don't think, losing to a Plymouth side that I feel they've got to be one of the favourites. They've aggressively gone after a manager that they know can get a team out of that division. He's taken half the team with him and plays a style of football that the fans, you hope, would get flocking back down there at Plymouth. From Crewe's point of view, what David Artell's done with the players that he's got, yes, there's always an emphasis on their homegrown players and bring them through, so the likes of Charlie Kirk stand out. But the business that he's done in recent days with Anini coming in, a bit of a journeyman, but again, a sizeable addition to the squad. I think maybe that element of entering a season without any, I'd say without any expectation, but without the kind of expectations that perhaps other clubs have with regard to going either up automatically or in the playoffs, means that they can operate very early on in the season without any real pressure. I mean, the pressure comes if the team continues to do well, and we've had those teams in various divisions, haven't we, where we've gone, let's just wait and see what happens. Let's see when they run out of legs, and they've gone on, and they've gone on, and they've gone on, and then suddenly you get around to the turn of the year, and they're in a really good position. I'm not saying for one second that that's exactly how crew season's going to pan out, but with players of the likes of Powell, who's a bit of a fitness doubt going into the weekend, they've got players that can win football matches. I mean, it was a place that was always built on progressive, attacking, possession-based football. And you can't really see them ever really coming away from that. But maybe what happened last season serves as a bit of a kick up the kind of collective backside to ensure that this season is deemed a success.
Michael, yeah, final point with you now. Obviously, you've managed in this division before. Just how difficult is it to compete? We saw, you know, the promotion race last year went right down to the wire, of course.
I'm going to get it in very quickly. I managed for a short period of time before them two give me any stick. So I was waiting for them to kill me off.
Never going to say that, Brown.
No, it is a tough league. And I think you can look at, there's some clubs trying to stay alive with no finances whatsoever. Then there's a couple of clubs who get some investment. You just mentioned there, Plymouth, Bradford, should be very, very strong. Mansfield tried it a few years ago, put a lot of money in, wasn't to be. And that's what it is. It's just a real tough league. And ultimately, you've seen how close it was last year. Bury have gone up, although we've all documented their difficulties. And we're just watching, you know, Lincoln, we've seen MK Don. Everybody's actually struggled in the leagues and had to come out over the years. And that's what it is.
It was certainly quite a lot of exciting action, though, going on again, once again, in the EFL across all three divisions this weekend. Guys, thank you very much for joining us on the EFL podcast, and have a good weekend.
You too, then. Cheers, fellas.
Enjoy it, everyone.
The official EFL podcast. The best reaction to all the match action. Available every week.